Good evening. We're going to continue with our studies on the priesthood, and I'm going to keep that little cardboard cutout thing of the tabernacle back there for the duration of the series here, so you can go back on the back table there and take a look at it if you'd like. And tonight we're going to talk about the garments of the priest. I'm going to put the overhead up again, the picture of the priest, just so that we can see that. And we'll be covering some of those things little by little. Just wanted to take a look at that. The high priest, now, we finished our work on the tabernacle and all the wonderful specific meanings of the tabernacle that we have already said they didn't necessarily understand the fullness of it, but today we see the application today. And it's the same thing with the priesthood. And we talked about the priesthood and the basic requirements of the priesthood last week, and we talked about some of those restrictions of the priesthood which still are today. Applicable today. So just absolutely marvelous. Did anyone get to kind of review that? Were you blessed in it in understanding that? So I would certainly hope so. Now, the garments of the priest. The high priest was a type of the great high priest, Jesus. I mean, that was the reenactment all of the time for the high priest. And because of that, even the garments that the priest wore are a description of the character of Christ. Now, because those garments were depicting the character of Christ, God commanded that the material that was used, even the texture, as well as the workmanship of the garments, were to be absolutely superb and of the best and of excellence. Even the garments. Now, unfortunately, the nature of man poked its ugly head back then, and those in the priesthood, some of them went astray. It puffed up their heads because this was a garment that only the priests wore, and it was known by all the people. And many of them just would strut, "Hey, look at me." And God doesn't want us to do that. The robe and the garment we wear today is His righteousness, has nothing to do with us. So it's a warning to us, just like back then. We're not to say, "Hey, look at me, I'm holy, I don't sin," or whatever. What a bunch of baloney. That sin nature is still in each one of us, and each one of us has the capacity to let it rule or let the Spirit of God rule. Now, when you let the Spirit of God rule, God says, if you walk by the Spirit, you cannot walk by the flesh, you will be free from sin. Only those after Jesus Christ, with the indwelling of the Spirit of God, can actually walk and not sin. Now, most of us have proclaimed we have hit 10 to 15 minutes of that every day. We're up to 10 to 15 minutes where you don't sin. Yeah, great. But you see, it's what Jesus did that we wear. Anything perfect and good and right and aligned with God did not come from you. It came from the Spirit within you. That's why the glory goes to God. This is so powerful. I really hope that God can press in our hearts. Even the garment, we wear the garment of righteousness. We should have the garment of praise on. And not to strut and say, "Oh, I'm better than you. I'm a Christian. I'm better than you." If anything, I tell you, we have such a high accountability before God to remain in a humble way before God, ever grateful that it's His Spirit in us that gives out the wisdom that comes from our mouths. It's His Spirit in us that allows us to walk without sin, should you choose to let it reign. And I don't know about your day, but in my day, I have all of these choices all the time. Sometimes I run the show, and sometimes God runs the show. When I run the show, it doesn't work right. It will always cause a confusion. It will always cause a problem. And it will be a bad example. And I don't want that. So you see, I fight my flesh. I crucify my flesh. And that's what each one of us is supposed to do. Now, these garments were beautiful. These garments, it wasn't because God just wanted something fancy for His priest to wear. All of the garments had meaning. That's what God's trying to tell us. Every single thing I do has meaning. Every single thing I tell you has meaning. Every single command I ever gave you has meaning. When God talks to us about integrity, sexual purity, sobriety, the things that are disappearing from the foundational core of our country and our culture, it wasn't for a bunch of rules for some puritanical God, wrathful God up there. There's meaning and wisdom behind every single thing. So even though the Adam nature rears up its ugly head and doesn't want to follow the dictates of God, they are the wisest thing for everyone to do. I mean, you just look at the Ten Commandments all alone by themselves. And some people, I say, if you don't like the first four that talks about God, then you at least do the last six all over the whole world and it will change. Can you imagine if everyone as of tomorrow honored their father and mother, did not lie, did not cheat, did not steal, did not commit adultery, did not murder, did not covet and envy that from their neighbor or their neighbor's wife? Can you imagine? Now, if you just do the last six, we will have peace on earth. And then you die and go to hell because you didn't do the first four. But that's your business. You know what I'm saying? But I'm just saying, if you just look at what God says to do, it has meaning that will bring you life and not death. So as we look at the garments, we can see what God has here for us. And like with the garments, they had to have fine linen, not coarse. This was fine. There wasn't any strands or dirt or little stubbled pieces of hay or junk or anything. This was fine, perfect linen. There was pure gold that was used in the vestments, in the garments. This gold was beat, because gold is soft and malleable. It was actually beaten into the fibers. It became a part of it. And some of these garments were a little heavy because of some of the gold in it. There were precious stones. God just didn't walk around and say, you know, pick up a couple of nice looking stones and stick them on a garment here. Wait till you see what the stones represent. Each one of these gems, I don't want to call them stones, gems, because you get the idea of a gem. These were precious stones, precious gems. It was costly things that they had. It was a skilled workmanship. It wasn't just anywhere. One, there were skilled workers. They were experts in the garment industry, expert in making these things. And they had to have wise hearts in doing it and in seeking God. Now, the actual garments of the priest that you can see here, the ephod or the breast, like a breastplate, is this thing here. If a man took his hand, you know, from thumb to small finger and spread it out, it was about the size of the width of a man's hand. It was a little bit larger than our lady's hands here. And it was made of a linen, and the gold was beaten into it. And it was actually a folded piece of material, because inside of it were a couple more stones called the Thummim and the Urim. And I left that little piece of paper at home. I got some additional information on it. But these were, it sounds a little strange, but I'm just saying there's a lot of mystery in the terms of the Lord. They had these special stones inside. And what they would do is, in seeking God, there was a connection somehow that God would show them something through those stones. Now, that didn't go on forever. After David, the high priest, none of that happened because there was actual prophecy coming out from the priesthood. So there was prophecy after that instead of the visions that God would give with the use of these stones. So it's kind of a little cloudy area in there, and I don't want us to get off on that. But whatever God does, he's talking about inside the breastplate, there was truth. That's all he's talking about. There was some connection to God in that. And then he moved that on and had an actual falling of his spirit upon the people, and then they would prophesy. And that is, we are so blessed, because with salvation and the indwelling of the Spirit of God in the holy tabernacle that we're supposed to be, then there is that prophecy there. There is that knowledge there. There is that discernment of spirits and wisdom and purity and power and authority that we never were born with and never can learn or get with a broken nature. So the stones had some meaning, so the high priest would wear the breastplate with the gemstones. And then there was some white linen, you hear the term breeches, but we're not too, we don't usually use the term breeches. We call them trousers. They were like pants. They were the white linen pants that were worn. That was an undergarment that was underneath this. And then there was a white linen overcoat. You can see the coat here. There's an overcoat, and you can't see the white linen trousers because they're underneath. But then there was a white linen coat. Now, all of this, very, very beautiful, well done, pure materials that were on that. Then there was a blue tunic. The regular priest from the house of Levi did not wear this, only the high priest, the blue tunic. It went over this linen coat, which was over the white trousers. And you can see on the bottom of the blue tunic were bells and then pomegranates. A bell, a pomegranate, a bell, and a pomegranate. And all of that had meaning too. And when it was used and when it wasn't used. And we'll get to all those things in just a moment. There's a sash that was worn, and the sash was worn underneath the garments, except on the Day of Atonement, it was worn on the outside. And then there's the head piece, the head covering that's there, and a little diadem thing here with a writing on that that was on the priest's head. All of it tremendous, tremendous meaning. Now, one of the most important things that the priest wore was this ephod that has the gemstones on it. And it was called the breastplate of judgment because the high priest had to wear it on his chest while asking God about the problems and the controversies that came up during the day, because through the priesthood, God gave his wisdom to the people. So this ephod was to be worn by the priest. Now, there's a lot of significance in the ephod. It's it had the gold in it, and it was decorated with blue and purple and scarlet linen pieces, which I said was doubled over, you know, in half to be like a little container to put the Urim and the Thummim. And there were 12 gemstones, and each had the name of one of the tribes of Israel on it. That's just very, very powerful. You see, the high priest was the only one that could go into the Holy of Holies, but guess what? With the ephod and the names, it's like he stood in proxy. He brought all 12 tribes in there. And each one of the gemstones was named. Very, very powerful. And with that in mind, with all this, you can see all of the things. Now, there's some meaning in the colors. When you study this, it's just really amazing how some stuff pops out at you. 26 times in the book of Exodus, these colors are mentioned, and always in the same order: gold, blue, purple, and scarlet. Now, the gold was real gold that they had, that was hammered out and, you know, worked into the linens. That's the symbol of deity, because it can't be changed or altered or affected by corrosive materials and fire and all this kind of stuff. Gold is a symbol of deity, the Godhead. Blue signifies divinity, the divineness of God, the expanse of the heavens. The purple, and we've heard this before, is a symbol of royalty. Now, you all have your handouts on that. You can feel free to kind of mark this stuff down here. Or you can go back online and listen to the audio, because there's a lot of information here. You may have to go over this a little bit more. But it's, again, it's not just information. May God pierce our hearts with what this means. Now, the purple was a symbol of royalty. Now, it's absolutely amazing that the purple is a combination of blue and red. And the very often, man is depicted as of the earth, the red clay, and also the red blood of Jesus. So the divinity of God, the red earth, so to speak. So you have God and man mixed, and that is absolutely perfect. That's the purple. Blue is separate, and the scarlet is separate, but purple, which means royalty, is a combination of both. So when God comes and mixes with us, that's how we get our royalty. royalty. Otherwise, we're just this dumb clay of the earth, just mankind. It's just really, everything we get is from God. We enter into kingship with Him. And you know, it's so amazing that He loves us so much. I want that kind of love in me. I want all of us to have that kind of love. It's unconditional. God knew all of our faults and frailties. He knew all of the horror and depravity of the heart of man, and yet He still woos us and calls us and loves us. We have to stop this fight against each other. Every single one is born with an Adam nature that is an offense to God first. It's guaranteed to be an offense to each other. We're going to hurt each other and harm each other and demean each other and come against each other and lie to each other and press up against each other. And on the journey, we should be working against that. We should be fighting against that. But because each of us are in this huge battle ourselves to battle the sin that comes up within us, we don't need to be battling each other. Now, we don't need to give excuse to each other. Oh, so-and-so is just angry today. What? No. We need to help each other, pray for each other. We need to correct each other, admonish each other in a right spirit, not a judgmental, you're aggravating me attitude spirit. This is a hard thing to do that God's asking us, and we can't do it with the nature we're born with. We have to call out for grace. We have to call out for favor. We have to call out for help. We are the high priest walking on this planet, the tabernacle of the very Spirit of God. We need to move up higher, folks. We need to go up higher. I'm not talking about being some religious goofball out there going, oh, look at me. You're right back here with the garments of the priest walking through the town thinking that you're some big whoop because you're in the lineage of the priesthood. You're a big whoop because of Jesus Christ. And that should humble us way down to realize we at any moment can be Adam nature people for any length of time. We need to choose against that. We need to choose against that. And when someone's in their Adam nature, we need to be in the God nature and love them through it. And get to help them, be the vehicle, the vessel that helps them get out of that horrible Adam nature that is hurting you, that is causing confusions in the families, that is causing disruptions in the businesses and in the education and the schools and in our whole community. We need to help. You don't need to be blind to sin. I'm not indicating that. We need to be alive. This is a vibrant, glorious, wonderful life. Every day you should wake up. Whoa, another day to serve God. Another day of challenge. God, you take care of my needs. You take care of the direction of my life. I want to be that high holy priest serving as your walking tabernacle. And you let God do the rest of it. Your heart's going to be filled. You're going to be able to do what you couldn't do before. That's what the whole thing is all about. So as we realize, this wonderful purple, meaning royalty, every time you see purple now, I want you to think of that. That divine, wonderful royalty of God, that divinity of God, the deity of God, and then the red clay of man. And He put them together to come up with purple, which is royalty. And guess what? It was a purple robe they put on Jesus, mocking Him as a king. Purple was a very precious color. I think it was this special murex or something, some sort of a special seed critter or something that gave out this dye. It was very rare and very special. That's why it was only reserved for the king. So it's just very powerful what God has done here. Now on the with the stones, if you'll bear with me just a moment, I have the overhead for that. All of this, you know, it's very easy to use the overheads because I can just put them up and down. But we're going to have to switch all of this eventually to our PowerPoints, and I don't have that right now, so I'll just have to refer you over to our poster that was made by one of our young people that has all of the different stones over there. The gemstones are there. They're labeled, and they have the names of the tribes on them, so you can take a look on that over there. But what I wanted to show you is in terms of the different gemstones, what the meaning is. and just the very meaning of them as I review them. I tell you, I just sit in awe sometimes as the Lord shows these things. The sardius was one of the gemstones that was on the ephod, and it was a red quartz. And that's the type of gemstone that was used to make seals and signets. Can you imagine? One of these gemstones was used to make seals. You know, when they would seal a letter or a contract or something. One of the stones is one that's used to seal contracts. It's God speaking to us. Talk about a covenant that he has with his people. The meaning is for us. It's the first stone in the breastplate. And it's God's way of kind of telling us and showing us the importance of being sealed in the blood of Jesus Christ. The very first gemstone was a sardius, which is a red quartz. Boy, I tell you, tabernacle that we had the pictures of, it showed the one opening. There is one entrance into the area that houses the tabernacle, the holy place, and the holy of holies. Powerful. So there's one way here. You have to be sealed. The very first gemstone talks about being sealed. And it was a red gemstone. You're sealed in the blood of Jesus Christ. The next one in the line was topaz, and I think you remember from the picture of the high priest, the ephod, it had three gemstones across and four down for the 12. So the first one was the sardius, the second one in the first row was a topaz. Now this is really neat that God just didn't pick these gemstones at random. He chose them for a reason, because he knew the qualities of the gemstones. The topaz was a rare yellow gem with static electric qualities. If you rub it, it has a little static to it. And that tells us that we should desire the wisdom of God. We want that to stick to us. We want God and everything is to stick to us. This is absolutely amazing. Now the next one was called, and I hate to even use this term because medically it's an ugly term. The next gemstone was called a carbuncle. No, that's yuck. A carbuncle. What we call it today is a garnet. It was a dark red garnet. So I want to give you both words in case you happen to run into it in some other studies. The original name was carbuncle, but because you get a big red welting pustulous thing on your body, that's called the carbuncle. So we don't want to think of that one. We're going to call it a nice dark red garnet. Now the original meaning of that word carbuncle is seed. So this third gemstone in the ephod signifies a seed, reminding us to have the seed of God, which is Jesus Christ, in us. Very, very powerful. The next one was an emerald. Now we're familiar with the emerald. We're familiar with the emerald as a green-colored, beautiful gemstone, and that's associated with like the coolness and the greenness of the earth. It's a symbol of life that was often used as tokens to show royal favor. So, very often you'd be given an emerald because it was supposed to be to signify a peace, you know, the coolness, the beautiful greenness of the earth, especially in the Middle East when so much is desert and dry. Anything to remind you of cool and green was considered like a treasure. So the emerald gem was to remind us of life, peace, and tranquility, that wonderful breath of fresh air in Jesus Christ. Now the next one was a sapphire, and you've heard of the blue sapphire. You know, there's like this big blue sapphire that's one of the biggest gems in the world, most expensive gems in the world, or whatever it is. But a sapphire is a clear blue gem, And sometimes you can have black star sapphires, and you can have blue star sapphires. The reason it gives off a little, when the light hits it, it looks like a star coming out from it, is because inside of it, it's got all these little cracks in it. You know, it's like these little fractures inside the gem itself. So when the light hits it, it gives off. It actually looks like a star. Has anyone ever seen that? I bought one in the Philippines years ago. I used to have an actual black star sapphire. When the sun hit it, it actually, what would reflect out, look like a bright star with all the multiple points on it. It was really beautiful. And what this was, and the high priest had that as part of the ephod, this is to remind us of the heavenlies. It's the stars up there to remind us that we're seated in the heavenlies with the Lord. It's something that is so powerful. We're stuck on this earth for so short a time. The freedom that we're going to have when this is all finished and we are with Him for eternity, there's going to be a new heaven and a new earth. And the freedom going back and forth, I mean, it just we have no clue. There will be no sin anymore, no tears, no fights, no struggles. There'll be a fullness of body and mind and spirit and soul and oneness with God. There'll be a holiness. The weather will be perfect. The air will be perfect. Not to worry about carbon footprints and light bulbs and all sorts of junk. Golly, we are heading to a place that God says the eye has not seen and the ear has not heard. That ought to excite you every day, knowing that this isn't the only thing there is. God help those that think they die and then just go into the ground and are worm food. That's it? Well, if this is all there is, no wonder people are going out and being wild and crazy, or else being so depressed there's nothing else. This is not all there is. This is the sin-sick world. This is the cursed place. This is the place that is uncomfortable. This is the place that is broken and doesn't work. This isn't all there is. God did not make this. This is like it is because of man's disobedience, and a curse was put on the earth. A curse was put on our bodies. We don't live forever in this condition. Thank you, Lord. We get to exchange this. This is dead and dying. It's not going to go to heaven with me. All of its ills and problems will not follow me. You are going to go to the one that owns you. And in salvation, Jesus Christ owns you. You are His child. You go to your king. And if you don't have that in you, you're going to go to the king and the prince of the power of this earth, and you are going to be in hell. It has nothing to do with God counting up your good works and figuring out who was nice and who wasn't. Bunch of foolishness. You either have God in you and are one with Him, holy and stainless and able to be in His presence, or you don't. And if you don't, there's only one other place for you to be, and that is the exact opposite. All unholiness, all depression and murder and garbage and lust and hatred and filthiness. That is where souls go who are not connected with God. It has nothing to do with this good work and which religion you are or anything. There is a wonderful God who loves us as people, who understands our humanity, who understands our handicap. But it's a choice you have to make, because only in obedience to God can you show your love. Only in submitting to Him and letting Him be your God and not you can you show that devotion and worship, and you're one of His. This is so, so powerful. So as we look at the ephod, we can see this reminder. It was supposed to be a reminder. These priests knew the qualities of these gems. They knew what they were there. Now, whether they understood the depth of what it means, I don't know. But we can, by God's mercy today, by His leadership and His giving us understanding today. Now, there were some others. The next one in line is the diamond. Now, we all are familiar with the diamond. And you know something? That wasn't first. The red one was first to remind us of the blood of Jesus. Boy, that's powerful. Now, the diamond was on the ephod also, one of the precious gems. Now, that's the hardest known material. I think a lot of people, they knew that back then. We know it today. It's also one of the most valued gemstones when it's flawless. and they look around, you have to really, you have to take one of those little magnifying things and look at that, you can find a flawless diamond that doesn't have any cracks and fractures and all that within the gemstone itself. Now, this diamond represents our value in Jesus. In Jesus, there is therefore now no condemnation, no cracks, no flaws. Wow. Can you imagine? Men and women, you're married to diamonds in the rough. And we always deal with the rough. They don't like the rough. But how do you get a diamond? It comes from coal, which is put under tremendous, not just a little bit, tremendous heat and pressure. And it changes the whole thing. That which was black and ugly and whatever turns into diamond. God is changing us into diamonds. We are going to have to be patient. We're going to have a God nature rule that we can get through this. You're married to diamonds. Stop and think of that. Some of them are a little rougher than others, but you're married to a diamond. Now, the people also have choices. If you're married to someone who doesn't know the Lord, you're in some deep trouble. Be praying and praying and praying, because it ain't going to happen for them. They're not going to be what you need. They cannot give you what you need spiritually if they're not on the spiritual plane. It's going to be a rough road the whole time. That's why God is wise when He says, do not be unequally yoked. It is just, it's so simple. But so many people don't. There's 6.5 billion people on the planet. The likelihood of you running into someone that you like is high. But is it the one that God has chosen and molded and shaped? For the most part, and most people, no. Now, it doesn't mean God can't change that. He can transform anything when you go to Him. Some people don't know the Lord, either one. They get married, then they both come to know the Lord. Some, there's only one that comes to know the Lord. Some, there's one knows the Lord and one doesn't. There's so many combinations out there. But isn't it wonderful? The one that God chooses doesn't mean you get an easy ride. It just means you're both coming from the same place. But you're diamonds in the rough. And if God is willing to work with each of us and to make that change and to love us unconditionally, we need to start adopting that attitude. We need to stop the judgments and the angers and the impatience and the unforgiveness. We need to start seeing people like God sees them. And we can't do that alone. We have to say, God, I need your viewpoint. I need your eyesight. So as these high priests years ago, thousands of years ago, wore these things on their chest, we need to have the reminders today. This needs to be on our chest too, so to speak. Now, you don't need to go out and buy one of these things or make one. I'm just saying the symbolism of it is what we need to understand. We need to have this, and guess where they wore it? They didn't wear it on their back pocket. They didn't wear it on their leg or their foot. They wore it right on their chest, the seat, the center of their heart, their inner being. This is what needs to be in our inner being. It was a huge word picture. The ephod was a symbol of what needs to be in us. The next one was the ligure, an amber zircon. And this is thought to bring rest and cure sleeplessness. Some people go out and buy these things and tuck them in their pillows, stick them in their bedrooms. They think they have some of these qualities. And what this was specifically chosen. God chose a gemstone that was used to bring rest, to remind us that God wants to what? Enter His rest, to lean on Him. The next one was the agate, which is a multicolored quartz formed by a water process. Now, in high school, you go through all this stuff. You learn about metamorphic rock and all the different kinds of rock. And we did that at our precious little school that we had here for years. And I was a teacher there, and I taught the science and the math and stuff and the history. And boy, I tell you, we went over a lot of these gemstones and the igneous rock and all the differences. Some of them are formed under, you know, different pressures and the volcanic situation, and others are formed in a water process and crystallization and stuff like that, all different things. But this particular agate was formed by a water process. And God wanted this particular stone to shout out to us, the river of God flows through us. What a reminder. I find this amazing. As we go through each one of these gemstones, that they had a specific meaning and or use or something like that, that God put them and had them put them on this ephod to remind the people. The next one was an amethyst. That's a purplish violet colored jewel. Some of you have amethyst rings or amethyst pendants or something. You're familiar with that. It was often used to make wine goblets. Now, isn't that amazing that he put the gemstone on here that they used to make wine goblets? Talk about the cup of the Lord. Jesus drank to the dregs, it says. So he got the ugly part of the deal with his suffering and his death so that we could drink the cup of blessing. Wow. So that we can drink the cup of blessing. Sweet pea, are you trying to write that on a little piece of paper there? We have some extra handouts in the back, honey. Yeah, if you want to help yourself to that. I love it. I absolutely, look at that. One of our gals picked up a handout for you. Bless the Lord.
Thank you.
Such determination. I love that. She's got this little postage stamp size piece of paper she's trying to write all this stuff down on. May God bless you in that as you review that, honey. Now, beryl is an aquamarine gemstone. And the tradition says that the stone made you fearless. This is a traditional thing. If you held that aquamarine, you were supposed to be fearless. And that's funny because my birthstone is aquamarine. Well, fearless, you know. I don't think I'm too fearless, but maybe I start wearing it again. So, this is to remind us that God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and boldness in the Lord. And sometimes we don't use that power and boldness. Now, I'm not talking about the Adam nature power and boldness. It gets very aggressive and confrontational. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about that power and boldness in the Lord. To make a stand when you know to do so. To make sure if everyone around you is lying, that you do not enter into that lie. If everyone around you is cheating, you do not enter into that cheating. The power and boldness in the Lord. If everyone is in anger, you do not enter into anger and argument and accusation and judgment. I don't care what's happening in our lives. God says we need His power and boldness. And the aquamarine gemstone was an example of that. It's called the beryl. Now the onyx, this one really got me here. The onyx is a flat stone. And you know, have you ever seen a cameo? You know, it's a little carving that's on, sometimes people would use it for a ring or a cameo pendant or something, where there's a little carving or something on there, or a little portrait of someone that's carved out of that. This particular stone was used to make cameos or a likeness of someone. This is the stone that was on the ephod. We are to come into the likeness of God. Talk about screaming out some directions to us here. Very powerful. And the last one was the last gemstone in the group was the jasper, a blue-green mineral stone. And the jasper, this is really, I love this. It was the 12th stone in the breastplate. So when you think of that little ephod, the breastplate, it was the last stone in the line. It was the 12th stone in the breastplate. But guess what? When you go and you look at when it talks about, you know, new heaven, new earth, and it talks about New Jerusalem, and it talks about the gates and the description of the city of Jerusalem, the heavenly city of Jerusalem. Guess what? The jasper is the first stone in the foundation of New Jerusalem. Whoa! That's a link here. On earth, the last stone is this jasper. It's the 12th stone in the ephod. But it's the first one in the New Jerusalem. What a stepping stone that is. Absolutely powerful. It shows us a link. It shows us a continuity of the earthly place and the heavenly place. Now, this particular jasper, this gemstone, was thought to bring joy, protection, healing, and happiness. Wow. Just like our praises do today. just like our connection with God does today. So when I saw that, it's the last stone on the breastplate, but the first stone in the New Jerusalem. Boy, I tell you, we are connected. We are connected. And it just, and God, all of this was done long before the priesthood. Can you imagine that? All of this before he even developed the priesthood. Because remember, there were patriarchs and there were judges and kings. There were a lot of stuff. There was the law with Moses. There were a lot of things before, you know, he developed the priesthood. You know, the priesthood came at a certain portion and a certain point. Remember, we talked about the individual was the priest, and the priest for the family, then the priest for the tribe, and then you have the high priest that's for the whole nation of Israel. So they didn't get the rules on the garments and the gemstones and all this from the day Adam was here. This all happened later on. But God knew this from the beginning, and he knew all the meaning, and he knew the connection. This should give us a really awesome picture of the power of God. That is the God I want to serve. He has things in control. He has all of the ability. He is not going to jump through the hoop for me. I'm going to jump through the hoop for him. There's too many people on the planet shaking their fist at God because he hasn't given him a car and didn't get into the college of their choice or didn't get the person they wanted to marry or didn't get that job. And they're just only concerned with this, what they eat, what they wear, where they go, what they do. There's no praise in their hearts. There's no submission to God. There's no service to God. He isn't even their God. It's some religious ideation they had from their childhood. They sit in church year after year. There's no relationship with God, and yet they're cursing him. They don't understand. Can we understand? His power is great. He wants to have fellowship with us. He wants to love us and care for us. And our sin blocks that. Not him not giving it. Our sin blocks that. Our rebellion blocks that. Now, he doesn't hate us. He says, I just can't help you. It's like when your kid is screaming and yelling and cursing you and coming against you and not obeying you. You're not going to give them the keys to the car that weekend. I guarantee it. You're going to require them to have a change in behavior. Not so that they remain your child, but so that you can give them blessings. They're going to remain your child. They're going to be, for the most part, still provided for by you. But if they want those blessings, honey, it don't come free. You're going to have to keep yourself in alignment with the appropriate authority in that family in order to get that. You ever hear of an inheritance? Have anyone ever been cut out of an inheritance? Right, yes! People have been cut out of inheritances because sometimes their behavior. But we don't. God says, listen. When you come to me, you're my child. But if you want my blessings, you need to be in alignment with me. I'll still love you. I'll still forgive you. I still have mercy on you. You can be with me in the kingdom, but don't let God own your soul and the devil own your life. Be in alignment with him. He says, I have blessings. I want to pour them out. Oh, I fill your cup to overflowing. But what we did was we framed up what we think the blessings are, and we're not happy unless we have certain things. We tell him what we want in our cup, and God says, that attitude's going to keep you sitting there for a long time in time out. Don't do that. Live a free life in God. Be free from sin. Get all the blessings he chooses to pour on you. We just had this situation with Carolyn, our champion for the website, who has developed that the whole thing from scratch, hour after hour, and talking to people and working on this and learning as she goes and taking what she already knew and expanding on that and all this stuff. And everything's going hunky-dory. We've had so many wonderful comments how God is touching the lives of people through our website. And guess what? Her computer with every single thing we need for the website crashes, gone into oblivion, don't even have a record of anything. Now, the website's still up there. All the stuff isn't gone from the website. It's still there. But all the information and who she contacted and the sites and all the paperwork and all the stuff that the articles that I've sent in that are waiting to be posted, it's all bye-bye. Well, now we serve a great God. Now there was a little wailing went on in the beginning. Whoa, what am I going to do? But that wailing didn't last too long. And I don't mean just Carolyn. When I heard about it, I was wailing too. I think Shirley didn't wail. She hung in there. She wasn't wailing. I went, oh no. But you know, I just took a second and said, oh, wait a minute now. What am I wailing about? This is a great God. You're the one to call the website. You're the one to give her the gifts to do it. This is just a challenge. That's all that is. Am I going to trust God or not? Well, everyone decided we're going to trust God. We know how he's going to do it. There certainly isn't a whole pile of extra finance here to say, oh, here, we're going to buy that for you. God worked it out. God worked it out. I can say this. Carolyn's mom, can I say this? Yeah. Carolyn's mom and her stepdad have been blessed by the ministry through the website. They don't live here locally. They live further away. They've been blessed by the ministry of the website. They turned around and said, oh, your computer's gone? We're buying you a new one. Not what you need, what you want. You pick what you want. And now she has a computer that's better, faster, going to do things more. It's enlarged. It's better. It's just like, whoa. So, you know, sometimes God has to blow up your junk to give you new. You know what I'm saying? And we're crying about blowing up the junk. When God blows up, now when you blow up something, God will help you put it back together. But when God blows up something in your life, we just need to say, God, now I don't understand this, but because I know you're good, you can't be doing this to hurt me. Because I know you're powerful, I know you're going to work it out. I just need to jump on the excitement bandwagon and say, how are you going to do this? Because it's going to take a miracle. And she didn't go whining to her mommy about what was happening. I don't even know how the conversation came up. But this was an immediate response to a problem. Boy, are we blessed. These are the blessings going to fill your cup. Wow, what a God we serve. Now I want to put that picture back up of the priest. Okay, I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to finish this, and we'll be able to finish up next week. That'll be the last in the series here, and we'll finish up on the rest of the garments of the priest, which are very, very important in terms of their symbolism on that. So let's go ahead and stop at this point, and we'll continue that next week.